time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
President Benson, you're one step from a dude chugging a beer on top of the school bus.
Pete Thamel.
I don't know if there's been as open a field in college football in the last decade.
With SI's Pat Forty.
You know, I've never met Wetzel, but he seems like the ultimate cynic. And I said, yeah, he kind of makes me look like Snow White.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, week 7. We're sort of halfway through. A lot of teams have 6 games in. We got 6 to go. One of those teams is Georgia. 6 wins. 6 up, 6 down. No problem. They are top ranked. Number 1. They look like the most dominant team going. They are your steady club. They've won in blowouts. They've won on the road in wild environments. They've won showdown games with Clemson. They've won with 2 different quarterbacks. Their defense is straight filthy. This is a really, really good team. I don't think there's anybody who would argue they're not the favorites to win the national title at this point, based on what you saw. Or whoever the hell is going to beat them has got to go through them. Which brings me to my question for you two esteemed gentlemen. How much pressure at this point is on the Bulldogs and on Kirby Smart, who has done an excellent job in his 5.5 years now in Athens? Mark Richt did an excellent job. He's done a little bit better job than that, but he ain't won it. He's made the playoffs, made the national title game in 17, hasn't been back. Alabama doesn't look quite like Alabama. They at least look gettable, mortal. Everybody else doesn't look as good. Pat, UGA has not won it since 1980, a drought that's almost unfathomable. How much pressure on Georgia and how much on Kirby Smart?
A ton, a mountain, all of it. Because for everything you just laid out, this is their year. I mean, you're sitting here today, mid-October. They are the one team, I think, that you look at and have a hard time finding flaws in. Their performances have been excellent. The competition is vulnerable. You know, they came really, really close to winning it all in 2017, and just Alabama was better. That was mostly what that came down to. This time, Alabama does not look better. Ohio State does not look better. They've already beaten Clemson. You know, there's other good teams out there. There's competition for sure, but they have all the chips in their corner. I think they've got an excellent stable of running backs. They've got 2 quarterbacks who can win big games. They've got guys, their receiving core has gotten better, which was supposed to be the big issue there. They're able to make plays in the passing game. Their defense, as you said, I think straight filthy is probably the best description of it. It's the best defense in the country, maybe one of the best defenses we've seen in a while. Schedule is not without challenges still remaining, but this is their year. It's their natty to win or to screw up one way or the other. And people have felt like Kirby Smart finds ways to screw up. You know, they'll find a game that he will not manage well, or, you know, something will go wrong and things will snowball into an inexplicably bad performance. But if your program keeps growing, you should eventually get past that point. And this is the time for Georgia, I think, no doubt about it.
So it's fascinating, right? Because Georgia has the best team. I don't know if there's been as open a field in college football in the last decade as has sort of the seas have parted for the Bulldogs right now. But the Bulldogs are also flawed. Like, this is not a perfect team. There's questions about their first-string quarterback. There's questions about their second-string quarterback. There's a lot of questions at the skill position. There's some questions at tight end. They have great tailbacks. Their offensive line is good, but it's not one of these elite mauling crews. So they are clearly the favorites, but they're also vulnerable. Now, look, they have put up points. Stetson Bennett has figured out a way to put up points. They have won your gnarly early season game against Clemson in a neutral field. They've, you know, beat hot Arkansas. They've gone on the road. They've done what you need to do. So give Georgia all the credit in the world for positioning themselves here. But any notion that it's fait accompli, that this crew is going to roll and win the national title, I just think there's drama left in all this. There's a loss left in Georgia at somewhere. You know, maybe it's punitive and cost them the title in the postseason. Maybe it's not. I just think that there are ways when they start playing up a weight class that Georgia can be slowed down. Look, Kirby Smart screwed up a few games. All right, I'm not gonna overlook that. I have not been as harsh on the timeline, if only because, like, the previous 30 years of Georgia football have been so massively underachieving that Kirby Smart getting to the cusp of accomplishing winning a national title and not getting there, I have a hard time getting too worked up over that. He's built the program. I think the key for Georgia is that he stacked classes. It's been class after class after class. You can afford, there's depth to, you know, at the receiver core. I mean, give him credit for bringing Stetson Bennett back, right? Like we talked about in the pod last week, the value of a good backup quarterback in college football is huge. Kirby Smart's done a wonderful job building the program to this point. I think they're going to win the national title, but I'm not certain of it at this juncture. There's just enough vulnerabilities and questions there to keep things pretty interesting the rest of the way.
Well, this being college football, I mean, I don't think there's ever, it's very, very rarely is that team you just sit there and say, no shot. Even Alabama at this point of last year, you don't see that. Most years, somebody loses a game and still wins the national title, which is why Alabama losing last week, hey, if they do not lose again, they'll win the playoff, right? And look, this field is going to change. Alabama and Ohio State are both looming, and they have equal talent, if not better, at a lot of positions. But if you just looked at it right now, this snapshot, and I know the college football playoff is along with being set and the committee hasn't met, but Georgia is number one. The next three teams, presumably, like if you were just going to say this is the other fields, Iowa, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma. Like Georgia take that, they'll take that field all, you know, every year. That's all we got to beat. We will see. But I just feel like, this team is blowing everybody out other than the Clemson in the opener was a touchdown. Everyone else, that win at Auburn was really impressive. First, you know, massive road game, big, huge environment. And again, Stetson Bennett. You know, this is a very valuable backup player. We talked about how much. It's like this is the year. The fact that it's gone this long without a title is pretty inexplicable. There's just so much talent, so much commitment, so much everything. I don't know. Now, they are playing Kentucky this weekend. They are, I believe, 23.5-point favorites.
Against an undefeated team.
Yeah, against a 6-0 Kentucky club. They also still have Florida at the cocktail party. You know, there's Tennessee, which I think we're going to try to talk about today, at Tennessee later.
And it's a pretty good debate. Which of those three games is the hardest, right? I would have to say Florida, I would think. But going on the road is no picnic. Tennessee can rattle you with the way they play offense. I don't know. I know who Sully thinks is the hardest.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't know about that.
All of them present a challenge, I think. I mean, yeah. I mean, Tennessee's offense has just been absurd. Thing is, you know, Tennessee's in October alone, Tennessee's the number one rushing offense in the country. I don't know whether you can run the ball consistently against Georgia. But Florida, you know, that game is a good game in the cocktail party and the 50-50 fan environment there. I think Kentucky's up against it, but we'll see. Kentucky, when Kentucky doesn't turn the ball over, they're quite good. So they all are interesting games for different reasons.
So I want to talk a little Kentucky. You know, we have been a long proponents of Mark Stoops and what he built there, and he's really got them 6-0 for Kentucky and manhandling LSU the way they did, beating Florida. Great environments up in Lexington the last couple weeks, and he's done a great job. So I want, and you get to this point of the season, and you start having the high profile openings or soon to be opens, and the biggest one in the South will be LSU if that opens. And so it's kind of natural to look around and say, okay, who's got a program punching above their weight? Certainly Kentucky, Mark Stoops has that at Kentucky. And you'd look at Mel Tucker at Michigan State and say, boy, is that a guy who could go for that elite level? So one of the questions is, you know, should Mark Stoops, let's say LSU wants Mark Stoops. Let's just take that as the base of the argument. Should he go?
Yes.
To LSU, yes, yes. Pete, you go ahead and tell us why first, and we'll see if I agree with you.
Well, the last three LSU coaches have won national titles, and two of them, most of us would argue, are not very good coaches. Nick Saban, he ended up okay. But so I just think, like, it's hard to mess up the LSU job. Now, we've seen some people do it pretty spectacularly, and Ed Orgeron's right in the middle of tripping over himself and face planting. But the talent per capita in Louisiana, and again, I don't have the metrics right in front of me, but a state with that much talent, with no competition, there's no Auburn, Alabama, Florida, Florida State, and anything like that. You have that much talent and that much passion behind one program. All you have to do is just harness that. The recruits are coming. They're coming. All you got to do is drive 65 on the highway and stay in the right lane, and you can win a national title every 5 years. That's what we've learned. That's what we've learned about the LSU job. So I just think Kentucky right now, Mark Stoops is amid the best it's ever been. And I just, because of lack of local talent, I don't think it can get distinctly better than like the top 10 range right now. Now, you know, Kentucky resident Pat Forty may disagree with me, but boy, if you keep trying to defy gravity at a place like Kentucky, it's gonna fall on your head eventually.
Yeah, no, I agree with you almost verbatim there. That like if it's a choice between LSU or staying at Kentucky, it's a no-brainer. The one thing you are getting into, you have to know. I mean, you are quite literally and figuratively getting into the tiger's den down there, because when things do go bad, they will turn on you in a heartbeat. Ed Orgeron, you know, grew up an LSU fan, is a Cajun from Louisiana, and a year and a half after going 15-0, winning a national title, they want to run him out on a rail, and they're going to get to it, appears, at the end of the season. And so you got to know going in, if that guy can get run out on a rail, so can I. This first time things don't go well. But in terms of which job can you take the furthest, there's no question. You go to LSU and you take that over staying at Kentucky, for sure. If it's Kentucky, Nebraska, which we discussed on a previous pod or something like that, it's much more of an argument, I think. But if LSU wants Mark Stoops should get on the first jet going and go to LSU.
All right, so let me ask you this, and all of this is true. Last four recruiting classes, LSU signed 9 Rivals 5-star recruits. Kentucky had 1. Much harder to do. You don't have that local in-state talent. You know, it just is what it is. And to Pete's point, yes, everybody wins at LSU. Like, Ed Orgeron and Les Miles didn't lead LSU to a national title. LSU led Ed Orgeron and Les Miles to a national title, right?
Like, correct.
Nobody thinks those guys were these genius coaches, but they correct. Got it. You just get it organized and get out of the way. All right, so here's my thing going forward. This is my philosophical debate, and I don't know that I believe it, but I'm throwing it out. The way the game is changing with transfer portal, with NIL, and with presumably an expanded college football playoff, the gap between LSU and Kentucky and what's possible shrinks. Doesn't even, but it shrinks, maybe considerably. So the best predictor of national championship caliber teams is proximity to talent. And that's why LSU has got so much of it and why they can win so easy. However, it's a different game now. It's not just loading up 25 recruits a year and hoping they pan out and working to get them to pan out. There's a secondary recruiting process where you fill people in and you get guys on the bounce. And when you're recruiting a 20-year-old, it's different than a 17-year-old. Maybe you don't need to be near mom anymore. Maybe it's not about whether there's a waterfall in the locker room. Maybe it's not, I love the school colors, or boy, on that recruiting visit, you should have seen what I saw, right? Okay.
What are you getting at, Dan?
I don't know. money is a little different. Everything's a little different, okay? Kentucky, at 20, people are going, where's the competent coach that can, because I got 2 years eligibility left. Where can I fill in and get to the league? Where can I get playing time? Where do I got a guy who really knows what the hell he's doing at my position? And so I wonder, and I'll just start with that. I'll go through all of them. You also add in NIL, which, as we said, would spread out talent to where, hey, being the big star, Will Levis is not the best quarterback in America. But boy, he's one of the biggest stars, and he's making some money because he's the big star at Kentucky, and you got a whole state that's excited about you. He's I don't know, Pat, is he the biggest sports star in Kentucky right now, in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
I would say it's still whoever, you know, whichever 5-star is the highest rated guy that John Calipari has coming in that's getting ready to tip off.
Okay.
But
who is that?
I don't know.
Well, there you go. I would agree. I would agree. But he's one of the biggest stars in an entire state.
Yeah, no, no. It's true. And I mean, one thing, look, I've always said Kentucky football fans are good fans because they've sat through some crap for decades and they still sit there. They go, they buy the tickets, they show up. So yeah, you can be a star football player at Kentucky. I mean, I would say without question, like if, you know, if you want to use that corollary, the biggest star athlete at Louisville in 40 years was Lamar Jackson. It was not a basketball player. They've won two national championships in between Daryl Griffith and Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson was the guy. And yes, if you get a Lamar Jackson at Kentucky, he will be as every bit as loved and promoted and compensated. So it can happen, sure. I mean, I think your argument, you can make that argument for sure. And I think there's definitely something to be said for recruiting the older, more experienced athlete who knows what they want a little bit more. And building teams with transfers. Now, you know, there's going to be a cap on annual transfers coming in at, I believe, 7, right, Pete? Isn't that the rule going in?
So they're adding 7. I don't know the rule, Pat.
They always got to regulate everything. They just can't freaking help themselves.
Yeah. All I know is people are mad about the 7. I'm getting all sorts of, they're ruining it even more, and they're not understanding, and they're screwing over the academic schools. Like, I'm getting a lot of that, but I haven't drilled down on it.
They complain about everything. All right, but that theory, and then let me throw in the last part. Can Kentucky go 12-0 in the SEC? No, I don't think they can. They're not making the playoff, maybe ever. Well, if all of a sudden there's 12 teams, they're hosting a game. Unless the playoff people screw that one up. Once you're in the tournament, you're in the tournament.
Sure.
You know, it's you're in, and who knows? And so I just think and I'm not saying it's now, and I'm saying, you don't take the LSU job if it's offered, but man, if you're comfortable, because you go to LSU, you now have to try to win 5-star recruiting battles against Alabama. That's the recipe. And if you're not built for that, then, you know, and everything's working the way you got it, and you can all of a sudden be like, because why would you not go to Kentucky if you're a great player? Well, they're never going to win the national championship. They're never going to make the playoff. They're never going to win the national. We'll make the playoff now. We would make this year.
Yeah.
So I just think this is a new era of college football. And I wonder if in a few years you sit there and go, yeah, I don't need to leave. I don't need to leave. I mean, it's a little better, but I don't know if it's enough better. Where in the past, there was a huge gap between a Kentucky and an LSU or a Michigan State and an LSU, right? Nick Saban jumped at that opportunity. If this is flash, you know, we're 5 years in the future, does Mel Tucker sit there and go, I got pretty good right here. I can get my guys right here. And I don't deal with the pressure of why the hell haven't you won the national title?
Right.
So
yeah, it's interesting because Kentucky and Michigan State those are the two schools that probably arguably have won the transfer portal battled for this year more than anyone else. So they could be kind of that template for how you do it at a place that's not where you're not just going to sign 24 and 5-star guys as 18-year-olds every single year.
Yeah, Michigan State's been trying for years to out-recruit Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame, which surround them. It doesn't really work. Like, nobody's cracked the code on that except on a few times. But for the most part, you're going to lose to those three schools. Kentucky can't traditionally beat the top SEC. So maybe this changes it. Go ahead, Pete.
Now, I was just going to say the transfer shell game is going to get more and more interesting now, because when do you use them, right? You can take transfers in late November, or you can take them in late. You know, when do you wait for that quarterback to drop in your lap? When do you wait for that backup quarterback to drop in your lap? I bet Kentucky was happy they had a scholarship and Wandale Robinson ended up in the transfer portal, right? I mean, because that he has clearly electrified that offense and kind of helped make them go. I'm sure glad they had a few open when Will Levis ended up in the transfer portal, right? Because they're a completely different program if he's not the quarterback this year. They're still good, but they're not sitting here at 11 and headed down for a game day matchup at Georgia. So I do think the calculus of when to hold them and when to fold them, if you will, is going to become a crucial part in roster management and the patience to be like, we're going to say no to that, like, three-star from here, and you wait for thumpers. And Kentucky landed thumpers. And that is all going to become just a huge part of how college football works in the future.
I just wonder. I think the whole game is changing, and that means even in the macro. And if you're a fan of those schools that are always sitting there going, I never stand a chance, but we care, Kentucky's a good example. They care.
Yeah.
Michigan State cares, man. They got a lot of fans. Yep. And it's just 17-year-olds for the last 50 years have walked into Columbus and walked into Ann Arbor and walked into East Lansing and said, I want to go to one of those other two. It's more of them, right? It's just this. And they can build no whatever facility you put up doesn't quite change it. You had Nick Saban there for 5 years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's a good point is they've all built all the facilities, like, right? Like almost every Power 5 school has all the facilities now. So you can't really facility your way into changing the balance of power.
Look at poor UMass. We talked to Pete was parking up their UMass great facilities.
Yeah, but they're on the way up now. They've won. Look out for UMass. they're coming.
Imagine when Dan starts donating what they could become. I mean, just think about that. Think about that. Dan bought a few Antonio's pizza slices for the boys in Amherst for their win, where they could go. You're holding it back, Dan.
One of my fellow UMass alums buys a couple copies of Epic Athletes for their kids, will make a healthy donation to them. That's my challenge. Okay, we got Tom Brady, we got Patrick Mahomes, we got LeBron, we got Simone. You just go to the Epic Athletes. I'll start buying recruits.
There we go.
What you want?
Yeah.
The Dan's pitch is going to be: if you start buying Epic Athletes, I'll kill the BCS. All right, that's his pitch.
Could still buy that book too. Yeah. All right, we have an update I wanted to get to. Do you remember our favorite player of the year, Georgia Southern defensive lineman Gavin Adcock?
Was he offensive lineman or defensive lineman?
I don't know. He had a mullet. I think he's a defensive lineman. Number 57.
He has great balance to crush a beer while surfing on that bus. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Famously wore his number 57 jersey. If you don't remember the story, Georgia Southern was heading to its game against Louisiana. They play at home, and part of their tradition is riding school buses over to the facility. And Gavin, on the ride, decided to get up on, amongst other players, there are a few players up there, got on top of the school bus, the old yellow school bus, and was surfing the school bus as it rolled through campus. Fans very excited, obviously, to see the team. They were cheering him on. Someone hucked him a beer. He opened it and gunned it down. Wasn't a shotgun, but chugged it while crowd surfing on the way to the game, then played in the game.
You've written an article after having a beer. Like, what's the difference?
I can't prove that. There is not a TikTok proving that.
Yeah, there's some copy editors that could give some good empirical evidence.
There are not a lot. I don't believe there's a lot of rules in Georgia Southern or Southern Georgia or South Georgia or Georgia South or anything down there. I'm fascinated by the area of the country. Just everything happens. There's just critters and all sorts of things. Great mullets. But even they frowned upon chugging the beer while very unsafe. Anyway, he got suspended for a game, came out on social media and posted on Snapchat, only got one game, 3 exclamation points. We back in action, 2 exclamation points. Georgia Southern said, sometimes you got to let your out, said Gavin Adcock. He is now no longer with Georgia Southern's football team.
He found how far the rules will bend. He found the pressure point there, the breaking point.
If you get a game suspension, don't mock him with that. Yeah. Gavin Adcock is in the transfer portal.
We had a great run with Gavin.
Yeah.
We love you. Gavin, drop us a line when you make your decision. We can break your commitment right here.
Let's break the commitment.
We're still behind
sources.
Sources.
at East Mississippi Junior College. That's next for him.
What year is Gavin? Do we know what year Gavin is?
Immature is what he is. I don't know.
Yes.
Could use more schooling. Let's put it that way. So moment of silence for our man, Gavin Adcock. It happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've removed the bio. And they're taking this seriously.
When he's been scrubbed from the roster website, that's tough.
Well, you know, before we get to some of these second half of the season storylines, we do have one other story that we wanted to get to here. And this is really not, there's nothing funny about this, except what the hell. A couple of guys in Bessemer, Alabama, were watching the Alabama versus Texas A&M game last week. Obviously, very exciting game. And the game was in the final minutes when Bessemer police say two men got into a dispute. Lieutenant Christian Clemens said the argument centered around which team was better. Who was better, Alabama or Texas A&M? And there was the final minutes of the game. The homeowner asked the two men to leave because they were fighting over this. And then they went outside and shots were fired and one of the men was struck and later died. So there's nothing good about that. But people.
Yeah. Come on.
If only there was a way to determine which team was better.
Like, yeah, finish watching the game and then look at the scoreboard.
This is not an argument over Batman versus Superman or something like that. Snickers versus Reese's Cups. They literally play the game. They have a scoreboard and everything. Why would you get in a fight over who is better while the game is going on?
Yeah, it hadn't ended yet. That was the thing that blew my mind. Like, yeah. They missed a heck of a finish.
Unfortunately, one of them will miss all the finishes from now on.
The other guy's got to watch in the day room.
Yeah, right.
The prison.
Yeah.
Listen, don't do, if anybody's listening to us thinks about shooting or getting in a shooting over, we do not kill, die, or kill, we, if it's not because I really care about you, it's just we only have so many listeners and we can't afford to lose it.
That's an old time Wetzel comment there. I will
if you
say,
do die, could you have them automatically download on your phone in perpetuity?
Please subscribe at the very, we're trying to make this damn business here.
If you could leave comments on our site posthumously, is that how you say that word? Yeah, whatever.
Let's go outside and have a gunfight to see who's better, or we could watch the game. And then they will determine it.
I have to say this. I tape Big Ten Network on Tuesdays, which is when we're recording this. And Dave Revson said before we started, he was talking about the pod and the running bit with the Ames tap water. Dave, who does a great job with them, but and listens to the pod both. And he did say, he said, you know, I've never met Wetzel, but he seems like the ultimate cynic. And I said, yeah, he kind of makes me look like Snow White. And I think that comment there, you might have just cemented yourself in the Cynic Hall of Fame.
I was on his show once, a couple times. I was in person in the studio. We were doing
I think
you
might
BCS.
Have said I don't know him well. Whatever the case. Gosh,
thought I was so memorable.
Yeah.
I went on the Big Ten Network. Everyone yelled at me for trying to get rid of the BCS. Jim Delaney's orders or something. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Whatever. Oh, we'll talk Big Ten.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, everyone stay alive as long as you can subscribe to the podcast.
Yeah. Just don't cancel your subscription. And if you do go off to the big house, try to get the other guys to listen. You guys got a lot of time on your hands.
Sitting around in the joint. Yeah. Listen to these guys. Yeah.
Play us at your tailgate, at the yard. You know,
whatever. Come on. We take whatever we can get, man. All right. Here's the storyline that will define the rest of this season. The Big Ten East is going to be huge. Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. First three are all 3-0. Penn State's 2-1 because they lost to Iowa. They all play each other. It's like a round robin starting in a couple weeks. Presuming they all get to the day before Halloween to 2 days after Thanksgiving, this is going to get settled. Pat, who do you think right now is going to win the Big Ten East? Because if you win this thing, you got a hell of a argument to be in this playoff.
Yes, you do. This is going to be super, super fun, that whole month of Big Ten football. Right now, I would give the edge to Ohio State. I know they lost early, but the last two games, they've clicked. They've got it going offensively. They look like the team that we thought we were going to see. And I think the schedule does set up well for them. Out of those three big games, two of them are at home. Penn State is at home. Michigan State is at home. They do have to go to Michigan. They have owned Michigan. We know that. Has Michigan come far enough to close that gap? I don't know. It's a pretty darn big gap. So, I mean, it would be really fun if Michigan is 11-0 and Ohio State is 10-1 when you get to that point. I don't know whether both of them will get there in that shape, but that would be great. But I right now I would favor Ohio State. They have the talent. They are putting the talent together. They are performing at a higher level. And again, they two of the three of the big games are at home.
All right, to switch this up, because Pete, I think you're going to go Ohio State also. You've said this before. Who comes in second out of that group? I mean, we're all going to take Ohio State. They got the best talent, and it's like until I see it, I haven't seen it. But Michigan State, Penn State, who's the Buckeyes' biggest threat out of those three? We'll put it that way.
I think if I had to call it right now, so both Penn State and Michigan State go to Ohio State, right? And that really matters in it. Penn State could be setting up for an interesting backdoor playoff case because. No, never mind, because I don't think they're going to win at Ohio State. And if they hadn't lost to Iowa, they could have just gone 11-1 and had a chance, because just those wins over Michigan and Michigan State are gonna mean more. And maybe if they do lose at Ohio State, I don't think it's totally ridiculous to start at least pondering the notion of some two-loss teams here being in the playoff conversation. I don't think Penn State will have the total muster to do that. If you look at Michigan right now, like, I'm super impressed with what Jim Harbaugh's done. They've got a great energy to the staff. They figured out defensively. They figured out how to keep people in front of them, which was obviously not Don Brown's specialty. I think they've played better than their talent on defense, quite frankly. So I give Michigan a lot of credit for how far they've come and where they've come. And you know, Jim Harbaugh and really Ward Manuel, who I think was shadow puppeting a lot of those staff changes as they were getting Harbaugh to agree to his more friendly to be fired contract. And I don't know if I think they are beat a top 10 team good. I think they are very good. And I think Michigan State's going to be a heck of a game. Could be a get Wetzel off the couch game, which will be exciting for all of us. And then from there, I have no problem believing Michigan's a top 10 team, but I don't know if they can push that all the way to becoming a legitimate playoff contender. It'll be fun to, you know, see them go to, you know, to see them go to Sparty on October 30th. That October 30th weekend shaping up to be pretty fun.
Phenomenal.
I wouldn't sleep on them going to Indiana this weekend. Indiana's desperate. Indiana's right. Solid. Like, Indiana is a lot of Indiana last year is a lot of Michigan this year. A team that doesn't beat itself, that plays hard on defense. It wouldn't shock me if Indiana kicked a field goal at the buzzer to beat Michigan State this weekend.
So my fascination with this is if anybody, clearly Michigan State or Michigan, if one of them wins, particularly fairly decisively against each other and Penn State, and then lose close to Ohio State, and Ohio State goes on to win the league, their argument as an extra playoff team, because they will have more quality wins, at least high-end wins, than – you know, maybe Alabama. You know, Alabama's quality wins may not be there. Michigan State beat Miami, too, in the non-conference and things like that. Like, if they're really going to get into that. Now, do I think at the end of the day they're going to give Alabama, if Alabama's, I guess they would have had to have beaten Georgia or this or that. I don't know. But they both Michigan State and Michigan could have really nice resumes without even winning their division. And in sure. the SEC, that's in the past been enough. I don't know if it's enough in the Big Ten or not. But
yeah, an 11-1 Michigan or Michigan State would be an interesting debate to throw them in there against whoever else is in the mix. But yeah, I mean, that's not out of the question at all. That's, I think, the Big Ten is positioned with a definite chance still to get two in this thing.
11-1 Kentucky.
Yeah, right.
What about them? So what if they lose close at Georgia? You know, there's some interesting one loss possibilities out there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Who do we think had a better out of conference, Michigan or Michigan State?
who has a better win.
I mean, Michigan beat Washington at home. Michigan State went to Miami and won. Neither of those teams are any good. I would credit Michigan State for at least going on the road and beating a bad Power 5 team as opposed to staying at home and watching a bad Power 5 team spectacularly explode and lose its offensive coordinator in the process, essentially. Michigan is the helmets and the brand is always going to get the benefit of the doubt, but you could credit Michigan State for at least Western. Yeah. I mean, going to Miami, we could debate the Western Michigan, Western Kentucky, all that kind of stuff until we're blue in the face. I'd enjoy it, but our listeners probably wouldn't. So, but I think Michigan State's done every bit as much as Michigan. That's my point.
Both beat Nebraska close, although Michigan won at Nebraska. We'll see what the Northwestern compare. I mean, those are the two crossovers.
Yeah.
And Michigan State beat Rutgers better, and that was on the road. I don't know. You go circles on this thing.
You can, and that's why, fortunately, they'll settle it on the field in East Lansing on the 30th, and then we'll see what happens thereafter. But, I mean, Michigan State's only had one close game so far. You know, they've handled business, and especially their three road games. They won by 17, won by 21, won by 18. That's pretty impressive.
All right, how about this one that's a little also interesting? In the SEC, everything's running through Big Orange. Very interesting game this weekend against Ole Miss in Knoxville. Ole Miss offense looks great. Gave up a ton of points to Arkansas, gave a ton of points. You know, we're not sure about that defense. I thought it was better. I'm no longer certain of that. After Ole Miss, they visit Alabama. They get a week off. They visit Kentucky. And then they got Georgia. So for the next five games, all the top teams in the SEC. Tennessee looks better, particularly of late. They beat Missouri and South Carolina, two teams that they should be better at historically, but haven't been lately. And you wonder, is this program hitting a stride where they can be a spoiler in the SEC, one of these contenders or having really strong seasons? Pat, what do you think?
I say look out. I mean, you know, sometimes, look, maybe we're going to put too much emphasis, or I'm going to put too much emphasis on beating Missouri and South Carolina, and this is only really winning the beanpot. But if what we saw those two games continues, I mean, they have offensively, it's been ridiculous. They've scored, I want to say, 56 points in the last two first quarters. I mean, they've scored 107 in the last two games, but 56 in the first two first quarter. So they're coming out hair on fire, killing teams. Now you catch Mississippi at home, coming off of a slobber knocker. You get that, and then you get, I think they can win that game. But then after that, you get a chance to try to slay the giant that is, I mean, that used to be a rivalry, and now it is hammer versus nail. Tennessee has been the nail since Nick Saban's gotten there. Do you have a chance to possibly catch Alabama on the wrong at the right time? And then Kentucky, you want to burst a balloon, maybe the big blue balloon and their best season they've had. Then you got Georgia at home. The opportunities are there. Are they good enough to, I mean, I don't think they're good enough to win all four. Could they win two? Maybe even three. And people would be super excited about Josh Heupel. And I'll admit, I was not excited about the hire of Heupel, but they've got an opportunity to show that, that he was the right guy here in the next few weeks if he can win some big games.
I was excited about Josh Heupel in terms of he would at least get them baseline competent on offense. And they are, like, more than competent. They're exciting to watch, which Sully could probably remember the last time they were as exciting to watch. It was probably when he was in high school at some point. So they
college
have the seventh-ranked.
Tyler Bray was throwing beer bottles. That's when the last time it was this exciting.
Yes, yes. When there's a Bray reference, who I just completely forgotten existed. that's a pretty good indicator of where we are. But they have the seventh best scoring offense in college football. And look, like, Tennessee's not out of the woods. They've still got that NCAA anvil looming over their head. The talent drain that came with the coaching change is going to impact them. But at the very least, when you roll into Neyland now, you know you are going to see a good offense. And this is with sort of like a, you know, ham and egg portal quarterback offense, right? Good for Josh Heupel. He's doing exactly what Josh Heupel has done. He's always figured out a way to move the ball. Here's my question about this game this weekend. Which fan base hates Lane Kiffin the most? Is it Tennessee? Is it USC? Is it Alabama? Is it Mississippi State? I mean, there's some good ponders there. Legitimate Sully, what do you think? Sully, what do you think? You obviously have firsthand angst here.
I do not forget sitting in my high school gym in 2009, hearing the buzz leaking throughout the crowd that Lane Kiffin was leaving. And I don't think the 102.455 is going to forget either this week. And I think we're going to see 2015 Oklahoma nasty crowd this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
Is that like a VolQuest message board post? Five nastiest crowds of this.
I don't even know what he was.
Baker Mayfield said it was the most raucous crowd he's ever played in front of, and I think we're going to get that again this weekend.
Throwing out numbers. There were like, was that area codes you were throwing out and stuff?
102.455 is the capacity now for the point of accuracy. 89.437, 88.470. 80.053, 82.203, 84.314. Those are your crowds.
They sold it out.
Can you guys speak the numbers in English? It's like, you don't say.
Is this a Morse code podcast?
Yeah, it's like the Niner 40. What is this military thing? Like
Delta,
89,437 people.
102,455 people will be in attendance this weekend.
Then say it like that. Not one. I need a damn abacus to follow you guys. I don't even know what you're talking about. 108,634. What?
Bingo. I think you thank Butch Jones for that.
Yeah. Bingo.
Oh, the abacus.
All right. Next question for the next month or so. Oklahoma is 6-0, and they may have a really good quarterback. Is Caleb Williams, if he becomes the starter, enough to take the Sooners all the way? TCU at Kansas, Texas Tech, week off. That's the next month. Pretty good way to ease a guy in. Then at Baylor, looking pretty good. Iowa State, still might be some fight in the Cyclones, at Oklahoma State. So, I don't know. But do you make this move now? Get this guy the reps in three games you should win? TCU will be interesting, but you got him at home. And say, hey, we can win this thing because I know he's a freshman, but we might have the best guy in that playoff. Now, maybe Desmond Ridder is your best quarterback. That's fine, but if it's going to be Stetson Bennett or JT Daniel, or it's going to be Bryce, I mean, hey, this guy might be it. So how much of a difference? Can the Sooners reset this season where they have not looked like a real contender, even if they're undefeated, and say, we are now? Pete?
Well, I mean, listeners to our podcast will know I've been all in on Caleb Williams all year, and I think we collectively, the three of us, were all pretty skeptical of Spencer Rattler. We did not see a guy who was going to be a top 10 draft pick. We did not see a guy who was just a no-brainer playoff quarterback in the same lineage of the Oklahoma quarterbacks before. But I'm all in on Caleb Williams. I think Lincoln Riley would be foolish to get in the way of progress right now and play both. Or I think he's him shielding Williams. I just think he's being sensitive to Rattler because that's a tough for a 20-year-old, 21-year-old, whatever it is. That's a tough crash to go from thinking you're going to be the number one pick in the draft to hitting the transfer portal likely at the end of the season. So to me, as I look at what Lincoln Riley's doing from the outside, I feel like he is tiptoeing around a sensitive situation. But I think Caleb Williams has the arm talent. I think he has the maturity. He's as bright of a young quarterback as I've ever been around. And look, he can't play linebacker too. This Oklahoma defense has been a flop. This was going to be the time that Alex Grinch's unit all came together. They just haven't, there's no other way to say it. They really haven't. And that's part of sort of what got lost in the miraculous comeback against Texas was just the abject failure of Oklahoma to stop Texas. All that said, I can't guarantee they're going to be in the playoff, but I can guarantee Caleb Williams gives them the best chance offensively to get in the playoff.
Yep, no doubt about it. And look, I mean, Lincoln Riley is not going to hold the team back on account of Spencer Rattler's feelings. I mean, he will definitely try to manage the situation in terms of PR, but in terms of PT, playing time, Caleb Williams is going to be the guy. I would be shocked if it's anything other than that. And as Dan pointed out, the schedule, this is the time. It's a pretty soft launch here, TCU, Kansas, Texas Tech, open week. And then you probably have three pretty big-time games to finish the regular season. By then, if he's got three starts plus all that Texas game under his belt, probably ready to roll. So this is the time. He's the guy. is the team good enough? I mean, I certainly share Pete's skepticism there. I mean, again, they have not beaten an FBS team by more than 7 points this year. I mean, every game has been close. It's at varying points in time. You can't keep going that way. I think eventually that catches up to you. There's enough weaknesses in that team defensively that somebody puts it together and beats you. And when you look at the resume, when you get to the end of this, I don't think there's going to be a lot of meat on that bone. We'll see if Oklahoma State holds up as a real quality win, if Baylor holds up. Iowa State is diminished. Nebraska is no good. You know, that's your big non-conference win there. So, I mean, their resume, if they end up 12-1, let's say, I'm just not sure that's a very good 12-1 compared to what could be some 11-1s or whatever else out there.
All right. We don't normally take requests. We don't take requests on this podcast. We talk about whatever we want to. We're hit up by a university president this week.
That's true.
Michael T. Benson, the president of Coastal Carolina, is a podcast listener, apparently.
He's listened for a while.
Yeah. Looking for a great podcast. You won't find any better. How about that? None better.
We got a bunch of presidents that listen, actually.
I'm not even agreeing to that. I think you can find better, but that's all right. We'll take like these guys are like, they're smart. What are they doing?
Why are they listening to us?
He wants us to talk more Coastal football, though.
Which one of us would look best in a mullet?
I used to have one, so.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, in the late 80s, early 90s.
40 mullet years. This is good.
Yeah. It was bad. But, yeah, it was kind of like a bad Bono-looking mullet, you know?
I can only imagine. All right. Well,
Pat, product of my times.
Pat is, the Missouri Compromise. Back in his days as a Tiger. Well, they beat Arkansas State last week, and they love a lot of antics in their locker room after victories. One of their big things has been the viral, it's been pro wrestling, different things. In this occasion, they got a stuffed wolf, as in the Arkansas State Red Wolves. And then had a staffer get a chainsaw out, rear it up, and they cut the wolf, stuffed wolf's head off in the locker. Wow. It's true. They then took the wolf head and mounted it on a piece of wood as the team celebrated. Have you seen this video?
I have not.
It was a tough fight. Right there. It was a tough fight.
He's dead.
I think we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
There's a chainsaw in the locker room. What could go wrong?
Cut off all their mullets if they lost, right? They just line them up.
Benson, you're one step from a dude chugging a beer on top of the school bus. I find this absolutely awesome, but there was a chainsaw loose in the locker room, and we're getting near that Halloween movie time. I don't know if Coastal Carolina can make the playoff. I don't know if they're the best team in the country, but the last 2 years, no one has had more fun in college football than Coastal Carolina. They just look like they have a blast every single week. Like, who cares?
They do. And winning is fun, so that breeds it. But, I mean, they've kind of got that special sauce of, like, how to build a program and energize a program. And they've got it going on. So, congrats. Jamie Chadwell and his staff, they know what they're doing. And I have to tell President Benson, if he's a regular listener to the pod, I did pick Coastal as my lock of the week last week when they beheaded the Wolves. And I have in the dash been extolling Grayson McCall as a Heisman Trophy candidate, leads the nation by a wide margin in pass efficiency. Love that guy, what he's done there. Look at their record. Look at Coastal's record without him And look at Coastal's record with him. Totally different programs. So, President Benson, I got your back. Your teal covered back.
President Benson has good taste. He only reads Yahoo. He doesn't read SI.com, Pat. I will say this. I did a feature. I went through Coastal this spring. I did a feature before the season or early in the season about these celebrations. And to me, this is the essence of Jamie Chadwell and what they are. So how many times have we sat there and heard a coach be like, we have to take it one game at a time. We can't look past our next opponent, like Snoresville. So basically to build that notion into his team without boring everyone to death. Now, Chadwell's been at a couple of smaller schools, I believe Charleston Southern and the Citadel. So as he worked his way up, he found his teams were like vulnerable after being up for big games, maybe not being up for some others. So he has an assistant be in charge of the celebration each week and be in charge of the theme for each week. So basically, whatever assistant was in charge of Chainsaw massacring the Red Wolf on like Sunday at the start of the week starts building up to that. And what it's become is, I really appreciate this because we've all been involved in like ridiculous, goofy things that get out of hand, is these coaches all started to get really competitive with each other to see who could create the most elaborate celebration, theme, ceremony, etc. I think it crescendoed last year with the WWE style celebration where they broke the table. And there was one when they were actually playing Coastal when they were at a different job where a live chicken was involved. And as Chadwell's telling me the story in his office, he was just like, by the way, we didn't kill the chicken. No chickens died. Just so you know, no chickens died. So,
well, that would offend us. We eat chicken sandwiches all day long. I mean,
like, yeah. Yeah.
We're a very chicken centric podcast.
Coastal's been great. I mean, they haven't lost a regular season game since 2019. The last team they lost to was Louisiana Monroe, who stinks, right? They went 5-7 that year. They have an unbelievably fun offense to watch.
It's really fun.
Grayson McCall. Yeah. And it's like everybody, this is my Coastal rant. So you have all these really good military academy coaches, be it Munkin at Army, Troy Calhoun at Air Force, Kenny Niumatalolo had a great run at Navy. Nobody hires these guys because they run the triple or they run military offense. Well, Coastal's pretty much running a hybrid of the option. And I always like roll my eyes at some of these places that really the great equalizer in college football for all the schemes and all the analytics and all everything is running the quarterback, right? If you can run the quarterback, you can take Mississippi State from a perennial cellar dweller to the number one team in the country. That to me has been and always will be college football's great offensive equalizer. So give Coastal credit. Now, it's not niched or stigmatized as the option. It's sort of this hybrid, innovative, but it's kind of the option. And so give them credit for marketing it as something genius, yet using the same fundamental as to what allows the military academies who have less talent to be equalizers or lower, you know, rung schools and power conferences. Yeah, they run the quarterback and they're using option principles and they're diverse and they're fun. God bless them. Go Coastal.
I think everyone's bragging about how much writing they've done about Coastal. I have not. President Benson wants to get me, on the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. I'll go play you for 18 now. I mean, I'm just saying. You know, he might know a few people in Myrtle Beach. Any university president wants to write in, we will consider. We will consider talking about your school.
Yeah,
consider.
Let's get a little presidential competition here. Who can talk their team onto the pod?
Most of them will be writing in to say, please don't talk about us. Stop. Guys are a bunch of jerks. All right, we're going to be back Thursday with the race for the case. All of the selections we will make. It's going to be exciting. Please continue to subscribe. Be like President Benson and share us on social media. Tell your friends about us, and we will talk to you later.